Don't say.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
Rush hour is so frustrating. Think about the time, money, and energy you're wasting just getting to the office. So here's a solution. With GoToMyPC, you can access your office PC from home or anywhere. GoToMyPC, brought to you by Citrix, is the award-winning remote access service. Instantly access your programs, files, emails, and even network resources. All you need is an internet connection. It's so easy to get started. No hardware, just a quick automatic setup. In fact, we just used that for a recent town hall meeting that we had. It worked great. I love it. Great, great product. Go to MyPC. In fact, you could try it for yourself for free. That's right, for free. You must visit gotomypc.com/podcast. That's gotomypc.com/podcast for your free 30-day trial. And welcome aboard to the Disciplined Investor Podcast, episode number 109. This is Andrew Horowitz. Thanks for spending some time with me here. We have a great show lined up today. Talk about a lot of things. I have a lot of kind of a hodgepodge of things I want to talk to you about, and I have a great guest, Dennis Gartman from the Gartman Letter. He is an expert when it comes to commodities and the markets, and you know who he is. He's been around. He's on CNBC all the time. He's on Bloomberg. I believe he's on just everywhere you want to find him. He gets around quite a bit. He obviously has been very hot on the commodity area. He's been very much involved in commodities, like as for example, he's been both sides of the coin, gold trade. He has been very, very hot on copper, and I thought we'd spend some time with him today. Last week we had a great discussion about commodities. I thought we'd continue it because commodities are the hot spot right now. If we are in fact in an inflationary market coming out of something and moving into maybe more of a, I don't want to say bullish, but an uptrend right now, and I'll talk to you about that in a second as well. Well, either way, it looks like commodities are going to be a great play. I always talk about the fact that, you know, you've heard me talk about my discussion about tuna fish and how, you know, if I'm in a bunker, I want tuna fish packed in oil, as crazy as that is. Well, I'll probably bring that up with Dennis. But I wanted to talk to you about something. You know, I got to tell you, have you ever, gone car shopping? I can't stand it. I mean, this is just something that drives me through the roof. As a matter of fact, it's so bad that oftentimes I don't even go car shopping. My wife doesn't mind it. Jill goes and she does her thing and then kind of comes back with some cars and, you know, the different colors and packages. And we look it up on the internet and then we go buy something. Well, my daughter wanted to go car shopping and she and my wife decided they'll go off and check it out. They went to four different car dealers. And I got to tell you something, what an experience. They're telling me, and I knew this, that's why I don't like going. They won't give her a price on the car unless they sign something. My wife says, I'm not signing anything. Just give me a price on the car. Let me understand how much it is, what we're talking about. Forget negotiation for a minute. Just where are we on this car that we want to buy? She's looking at a Toyota. And this is her first car, for Lauren's first car. And she's got her license. Yep, it makes me a little nervous. But, yeah, another teenager on the road. And, you know, great that she saved up her money and she's looking for a car. So she likes this Toyota. And they went to four different dealerships, and none of them will give them a price. They take them on the runaround. They're not allowed to even talk with them unless they go for a drive. There's a whole routine going. I mean, is anybody not telling these car dealers that they need to be selling cars? They need to be changing their ways? But I don't think so. I mean, it just seems, it's just amazing to me that no matter what, they won't get it through their heads that they can't do business as usual anymore. I mean, we have Chrysler going down. We have General Motors looking like they're going to also go into bankruptcy. And whatever that means, well, they're going to be shutting down dealerships left and right. And Mr. Car Salesman, you know, maybe this is going to be your last sale. And maybe you can actually make somebody feel good about the coming to the dealership, not feeling disgusting and slimy when they walk out of being with you because, you know, you've really put them through the ringers. I'm sure you've had the same experience. And I got to tell you something. It's not only domestic car sales, it's the foreign car sales is Toyota dealership. The same situation over and over. They need to change their ways. I don't want to get into this anymore, but I got to tell you something. I'm just absolutely disgusted with them. I'm sure you're probably sitting there shaking your head. Yes, you know what I'm talking about. But let's talk about some things that are going on in the markets right now. We saw the Dow Jones, the S&P, the NASDAQ finally come off of a, I think it was a nine-week rally. Wow, amazing. We saw another down week. The broad-based index of the S&P 500 was down about 5% last week. We saw a lot of stocks falling. We saw a 90% day and 90% down day throughout the week. I think it was on Wednesday. And oil was rising throughout the week. We saw stockpiles, actually saw drawdowns on it, which was interesting. Have you noticed this? When we see the oil reports come out recently, for the last, I would say, I don't know, the last, let's call it 2 months, we saw dramatic increases in the stockpiles, 3 million, 2.5 million, 3 million. And initially, we saw, oil drop off. It would drop off after that. You would think that would be the case. The demand wasn't there, et cetera. And then it would rise right afterwards, maybe a day afterwards. Well, this time, this week, we saw oil inventories, actually a big drawdown in oil inventories this week. And exactly the opposite happened. Initially, it went up like you would think it would, and then started dropping down because all of a sudden there's this thought that, well, demand isn't going to be there. So I don't exactly know. This oil market is a little funky right now. It's really hitting against that $60 range. A lot of analysts have been calling for about a $70 range top end on oil right now. This weekend, we saw OPEC come out with an announcement that they no longer want to see all this oil floating around in cargo container ships throughout the oceans of the world. We talked about this a few times, the contango issue that is forcing, or not even, maybe not forcing, but it is calling the trade to actually store oil for the future, for future delivery, because the longer term future price on oil is much higher than the current trade. At least it was in a really big range when oil was down in the high 30s and 40s. Now that we have oil in the mid to high 50s, the trade isn't making as much sense, but OPEC clearly is announcing that they are going to battle this situation. They believe that oil does not need to be floating around, and you don't obviously need that much inventory, surplus, and they're going to shut down production. They're talking about this now. Now, that's going to drive oil prices up initially. I'm sure of that. And that's just going to add on top of the inflationary environment that we're starting to see with the incredible and just immense amount of spending on dollars and printing of dollars that we've seen over the last couple of months, 3 months with the Fed and the Treasury. That's first of all. One of the things we like with that is the commodity sector. We've talked about this. We talked about the kind of the materials, which encompasses, of course, the commodities, generally speaking. You're looking to see enhancement of the food commodities, which is our favorite, the ags. I think we've talked about that ad nauseum already. And look what happened with Mosaic and Potash last week. Amazing. I mean, we picked up Mosaic at about $38 a share for our client portfolios, and it's now about $25, $23 higher. And that's just calling for the demand of agriculture and for food commodities. We're seeing that really take off, and that is a clear sign there is some consumption coming back. Now, at the same time, we're seeing questionable levels of the steel and the we'll call it the non-precious metals. And those commodities haven't seen the same consumption and demand, but yet they're starting to pick up as well. There's a feeling that we're starting to see some green shoots in that area. Well, I don't know if the green shoots are going to last. We're seeing a lot of green ooze as well and a lot of green envy, right? The three things that we look at in this market right now. But there are a couple of things that are very interesting. Well, let's talk about, in addition to the fact that we see commodity sectors really doing well, we see the market coming back a little bit. What's happening in a big picture? Well, one of the things I like to look at is something called the McClellan Oscillator. This is an interesting breadth indicator. It's a technical analysis, kind of a global, when I talk about domestic market, but the New York Stock Exchange advanced decline line, and it's an indicator that looks at an oscillator, a 14 and a 39 day and a period review. Basically, without all the details of what it does, we get levels on the McClellan Oscillator when you get overbought situations dramatically. We do see the McClellan Oscillator peaking out, and then when it starts to roll over and come down, it's a short-term indicator, we see oversupply, if you will, and too much demand in the market, and we do see the markets come down. It works very well. It's actually a good indicator. It looks at the advanced decline line primarily of the New York Stock Exchange, the NYSE, and the NASDAQ. Now, what's interesting is there's a secondary one that most people don't talk about. It's called a summation index. Now, the summation index is also McClellan summation index. It's a longer-term trend indicator of the McClellan oscillator. Now, here's what's interesting about that. They're telling a much different story, both of them. Now, McClellan says that when he created this and when he looks at this, when we see the McClellan summation index go below 1,000 and then quickly move up over 2,000, it's a sign of an impending bull market. Now, that happened recently. That happened from March through the end of April. The McClellan summation index started rolling over a little bit now, and the McClellan oscillator clearly rolled and is coming into a negative divergence. So it's coming through the actual negative line, saying that we are in a clearly a downtrend for the temporary time right now. But what I find interesting, and I find kind of hard to believe, actually, is that this they're saying now, from the McClellan oscillator standpoint, and if you look at StockTrot's John Murphy saying that this is not a bear market rally, rather it is the beginning of the next bull market. So what I wanted to do was I wanted to look back. I wanted to see back in 2000 through 2003, let's say, the time when the market was really coming down, and then we turned into a five-year or four-year bull market after that. What was going on with the McClellan oscillator and the McClellan summation index to see if there was anything I could take a look at that looked, you know, there's any commonalities in that. What I found was interesting. What I saw was that the McClellan oscillator, the short-term index, was showing very similar signs to what we saw where we had, don't forget, there was a triple bottom at that point throughout that bear market. And some of them were a little bit more harsh than others. But yet, the same, we saw the dramatic move down about 50% off of the highs of the New York Stock Exchange and big dips three times. And the McClellan oscillator clearly called each of the turning points of the dips and the rise. Okay. The summation index also showed exactly what Tom McClellan, who is the inventor of the McClellan oscillator, what he's talking about, where we saw a dramatic dip below 1,000, and then when it came up above, all the way through the top end, was the beginning, not necessarily the exact start of a straight line up, but the beginning of the next bull run. Now, is that happening now? I have a hard time with it. I have a hard time looking at one indicator and surmising what's happening, you know, for the next 2, 3, 4 years, in particular with this exact market cycle, which is much different than what happened back then. Remember something, back in the year 2000, it was an isolated event that we created this, we had this recession happen, but it was isolated because we had just a tremendously, overdone and overblown bubble in the technology index that just blew up, and it created the beginnings of this recessionary period. And then on the back end of it, though, you know, we had incredible supply of money because we had the housing market just blossom from there. And it created an entirely new bull market that was based on housing and building and money that was available on through leverage, through home equity lines of credit, et cetera. I mean, it was just a crazy orgy of money from 2003 to 2007, if you think about it. Really, think about it. That same thing is not happening here. Sure, we have an easy money policy by the Fed, but we don't have the amount of leverage by any means. As a matter of fact, it's being cut down daily. Take a look at what's going on with the level of bank loans. It's pathetic. And on top of that, home equity lines of credit is being slashed. You can't increase those because there is nothing available when it comes to housing values that are still down 20% from a year ago, according to the Case-Shiller Index. And when you look at the current setup, I'm hard-pressed to see a bull market in the making. Now, I will say to you, our intermediate term target, at least right now, is somewhere about 780 on the S&P 500. We think that, you know, once the green shoots and the kind of smoke clears with the banking issues right now, there is going to be another leg down, whether it happens right now. We talked about this last week. I wrote a piece last Monday for MSN Money and on our site. I said, was that the top of the bear market rally? Was that it? And where do we go from here? Hopefully you were paying attention to that and you saved yourself a lot of money last week. And I think that when we look at all the things, when you put everything together, even though we look at the technical analysis, whether it's stochastics and various oscillators like MACDs or McClellan oscillator or, you know, the RSI, when you look at all of it together, it seems to me that this is not where we're off to the races, at least for now. I need more evidence. I need to see the economics come in and not be just not so bad. That is not the makings of a bear market. When we see not so bad, when we see 600 handles on 600,000 unemployment initial claims and unemployment rate at 9% going to, I don't know, 10, 12. So I think that right now we need to err on the side of caution. In addition to that, I think that we need to be aware of the fact that there's some weird things going on. I mean, look at what happened last week with the sham of the century, where the banks were said to need only $74 billion. You saw this, right? I don't know if I talked about this or not, but the banks were said to need $74 billion after they came out of the quote-unquote stress test. Now, whether or not the stress tests were stressful or not, the Wall Street Journal did an investigative study and showed point by point how at the last minute the Fed came out with the change of the stress test. They came out and they actually put a line item in there that allowed for earnouts and a few other calculations to show how the banks would only owe in total $74 billion, when in fact, without that, it was $184 billion. $110 billion was actually removed from the line of what would be required by the banks at the very last minute. That's why they postponed it to that Thursday. Remember that? They postponed it to Thursday. And they kind of under the carpet, brushed it all under the carpet and showed you just $74 billion after they leaked it all out. I mean, just a real sham. Now we have the insurance companies that are also eligible for billions of dollars of bailout, whether it's Prudential and Principal, Lincoln, Hartford. We actually, once the news came out, we shorted those companies. And by the end of the day, there was a giant pop. We figured that, you know what? They're going to probably do secondary offerings as well, be diluted for their shares like every other company does, whether it's Ford, whether it was Goldman, in terms of offerings or a JP or Capital One. And we've seen what happens, whether they're offering bonds or stocks or secondaries or whatever it is that they're offering for dilution purposes. And last week, when it comes to dilution, I mean, we saw what happened with Ford. I mean, they're just diluting shares and selling at the top the best they can, these companies. We figured the same thing was going to happen. By the end of the day on Friday, that initial pop where we shorted, we were up about 15%. These are the kind of opportunities you need to be looking for, whether it's short or long, aberrations in the market. So right now, I think that we need to err on the side of caution. All the things that I'm looking at, you know, when we look at where we are in the markets right now, listen, we are still very much in a bear market. The current S&P, listen, the S&P is down, what, 38% from the top here, or 39% from the top. The Dow Jones is what, off 36%. And the NASDAQ is doing much better recently. The worldwide situation is also doing much better. But realize something, even though Brazil is up remarkably this year, I mean remarkably, it's still down 35% from its high 52 weeks ago. So I think that when we look at this circumstance, one of our favorite situations right now is to be in the agricultural and the food commodities and some of the material companies and kind of be cautious about the markets in themselves. Be very selective, stock by stock, and be very careful not to be caught up in the fact that, oh, they're just going to go up from here. Set your stops wide. You need to set them wide. And tighten them as the market rolls over. So in the up market, set the stops wide as best you can to grab as much upside you can. And when the stock market starts rolling over like we're seeing right now, even if it's temporary, you can get back in. Don't forget about that. And there's no preclusion from that. You could always get back in. You know, make sure that you look to set them low and to put some hedging in there. There was a great question that came in recently and said, Andrew, tell me about hedging. Why don't you just keep a lot of cash? The extra cost to hedge, et cetera. When I talk about hedging, what I'm talking about is broad-based market hedge individually and then go after individual stocks long and short. Because the market may go down or up, but individual stocks may not agree with the total market. So what you can do, the best of all worlds, is, of course, to go very long and then short stocks in a bull market that you think are going to go down, or opposite, in a bear market, you know, short the entire market and maybe go long individual names that you really like. I mean, look what happened with the retailers lately. Look what happened to the casual dining lately. They went through the roof when the market was coming down. Look what happened with companies like AutoZone or Joseph A. Banks, which we recently short, by the way, and covered for about a 15 or 18% gain very, very quickly on that. Look what happened to those. They defied the gravity of the market. So you can actually play both sides. So when I say hedging, what you want to do is you want to hedge out the total risk of the markets themselves and then be in the individual positions that you want to be in. That was a great question that came in. Anyway, if you have any questions, you know where to write me. Ask Andrew at thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Pick up a copy of the book, The Disciplined Investor, over at Amazon. Listen to us, John Dvorak and myself, on DH Unplugged. And when we get back, we're going to talk with Dennis Gartman from The Gartman Letter. I hope you stick around. This is the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We'll be right back. All right, a lot of you have asked me before to bring on Dennis Gartman, and I tracked him down and I got him, and I'm real happy to have him here today. He is the writer of the Gartman Letter. And how are you today, sir?
I'm doing fine. I'm on my way back from the quarterly endowment investment committee meeting for NC State and making my way through North Carolina countryside.
Nice. Very nice. Beautiful area. Beautiful, beautiful city. We missed each other. You were in Vegas at the Money Show last week.
Yes, I was. I was there for just one day.
Yeah, me too. I came in. I went in. I had dinner, did a few speeches, did a few videos, got on the red eye, and came right home. The highlight of the trip? The highlight, I sat behind George Clooney in the business class. It was fabulous.
Very cool.
Anyway, so let's talk a little bit about some of these commodities. You know, I watch you. I have one show. I'll be honest. I have one show I watch on CNBC, and that's Fast Money. And I watch it every night at midnight. And I love when you come on. You've been talking a lot about stuff. I guess you're the kind of you're the George Carlin of finance, right? And I don't know if anybody's ever called you that before. But so talk to me about stuff. You know, you have been really, really hot on copper as an example, and a few of the other things. What's happening with all this? Is this stockpiling? Is it really demand? What's going on with all these commodities?
Well, I think it's a number of things. I think it's the understanding that we overshot on the downside, that the world has not gone into depression, that the monetary authorities have acted properly in making certain that there's plenty of reserves added to the system. I think those reserves are making their way, first of all, into the capital markets, and then eventually they shall make their way into the real economy. And I think that that's what's driving the demand for stuff. It's expectations that infrastructure growth in China, that infrastructure activity here in the United States will eventually give way to greater demand for steel, for copper, for the things that you need to rebuild an economy. And I think it's nothing more than that.
So copper, let's talk about that, because I've been very interested in that. One of the things that copper does is to build the infrastructure. There's two things. It's fiber optics and copper when it talks about telecommunications. Is that where the buy is? What else is copper being used for?
Oh, copper goes into electric motors. Copper goes into housing. Copper goes into commercial building. Copper goes into automobile production. And let's be honest, copper prices fell from $4 a pound
right down
close to a dollar. I mean, when you start to take something down 75% from its highs, that's starting to get relatively cheap. So there's a lot of things that copper is used for, and we tend to forget them.
Yeah, so you also, if I'm not mistaken, I think I heard you say that you were not very bullish on gold. I mean, different the industrial metals versus the precious metals. I think there's a demarcation line there for you, right?
Yes, I would much rather own the industrial metals. I'd much rather own zinc and tin and copper than I would gold. In fact, at this point, I'm long of the grain market, and I'm actually short of gold. That doesn't mean that I'm bearish on gold. It just means that I think grains are very inexpensive relative to gold, which I think is relatively expensive. I look at gold as being a currency, and you can price the amount of corn that it takes. How many bushels of corn does it take to buy an ounce of gold? And we've gotten to the point where the grains are very, very cheap, and I think gold is very expensive.
You know, somebody asked me, you know, what do I think about gold as an inflation hedge and also the bunker mentality? I got to have something if I end up in the bunker. You know what I tell them? I tell them, if I'm in the bunker, I don't want gold. I want tuna fish.
By the
way, I want tuna fish packed in oil. Because if it's packed in oil, I can at least use the oil maybe for some type of a heating substitute, or maybe use it to, you know, put it on my body. I don't know, something, and I can eat it. You know, what am I going to do with gold? I'm going to start chipping off little pieces of it? I mean, I know that sounds ridiculous.
It does amuse me, because people say, well, it will be the ultimate money. If we get to the point where we need to have gold as the ultimate money, we've got other much larger problems.
Big trouble.
Yes, it's very hard to chip off a gram of gold and say, here, I need to buy a side of beef.
Right, exactly.
It's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think my tuna fish theory holds up here. So wheat.
Yeah, I think that's very good.
So wheat, I heard recently that in India, I don't know if you heard this, but there's so much wheat, so much excess wheat for some reason due to an export ban, that the wheat is lying under tarps in schoolyards, various, I don't know, just various places, in parking lots. Have you heard about this?
Well, I really haven't. And, but that wouldn't surprise me, because almost at the end of every crop year, at the end of every harvest, we usually pile up corn on the ground in Iowa and put it under tarps. We often have to run out of grain elevator space for wheat and put it under tarps. That's not unusual.
Okay, all right. And
it happens here in the United States.
Right.
And nobody writes that up very often.
Yeah. Last week we had somebody I was talking, I don't do commodities that often, but last week we had a gentleman on and we talked about corn, and he said that this year's corn planting may be really, because of soggy grounds and a few other things, may be really questionable, and he's really concerned that we may see a dramatic increase in pricing over the summer. Is that something that you share?
Well, it's possible. I'm a little concerned about the fact that the corn crop is very late getting in.
Mm-hmm.
It's been extremely wet. Last year we were worried about drought. This year we're worried about extreme wetness in the cropland. And you really haven't been able to get these large planters into the field. We're talking here, it's May 15. This is usually the day that you need to have the entire corn crop planted and done. And we're really not even close. And you can still get the crop in. It could still be a perfect, wonderful crop. And the problem is, if you're planting in wet weather, the roots of the plant tend not to go down very far because the moisture that it needs is right on the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd rather have the plant have to drive its roots down, because if it does, when you get into the summertime, and you always get dryness, you like to have that plant with its roots down deep in the soil. Two, because it's late, if you get to the back end of the crop and we have any kind of frost, you may have a crop that isn't fully mature, and you could damage the crop in the back end. So we are late, and that's a problem.
Mm, interesting. So how do you actually trade these? Do you go right to the futures markets, I mean, commodity markets, or do you use ETFs or any of this? What do you do?
Yes and yes. For the public, the easiest way is probably the advent of ETFs. I mean, you can use DBA, which corn plus some, livestock of small amount in there. You can go to JJG, which really is just nothing but grain. It's a little less liquid than DBA. You can go to Moo, which is an ag-oriented ETF. So there's any number of ways, but if you want to do the purest play, the pure play is obviously the futures market.
Yeah, we actually, we've invested in Moo. We use, for the water, we use Poo. We have kind of a Moo and a Poo thing going on here.
Yeah.
But we like Moo. It's actually, Moo's done extraordinarily well over the last number of weeks, which I'm very pleased about.
Yeah, well, very good. And so DBA has had a good run.
Yep.
They're not doing all that well today, but those things happen.
All right, let's just finish off. You wrote the 22 rules of trading. We're not going to go through all these, but very quickly, you have some really good things in here. And obviously, you know, I would encourage people to go check out the Gartman. By the way, where can people get your letter? How can they subscribe to that?
Well, the easiest way is to just send an email to the office, either to Liz, L-I-Z, at thegartmanletter.com, or you can go to Cameron, C-A-M-E-R-O-N, Cameron at thegartmanletter.com, and just send them a note and ask them if they can be put on trial for a couple of weeks. I will say it's not cheap. It is primarily for institutions. Those are the predominant majority, far and away the largest majority of my clients are all institutional clientele,
mm-hmm.
oil companies, grain traders, hedge funds, that sort of thing. But if the public wants to take a look, just send a note and we'll have to send it to them for a couple of days.
So one of the things I see you see having on these 22 rules of trading, a couple of different things. I mean, never ever add to a losing position. Well, that's, I mean, good common sense. And then
sure,
the objective is not to... What's that?
That is common sense. And the problem is most people don't do it. Most people add to losing trades. Most people cut back their winners and add to their losers. And the rules of trading are really nothing more than common sense. And common sense is if you have a losing trade, you should cut it back. If you have a winning trade, you should try to add to it.
Right.
And that's probably the most important rule of all. Let's do more of the things that have been working. Let's do less of the things that haven't.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's really hard to chase something and you don't want to get in. And then we all get that. It's very difficult. You also mentioned here that I thought it was really kind of interesting is that... You talk about trading runs in cycles, some good and some bad, and trade large aggressively when things are good. I mean, can you talk about that briefly?
Well, it really is true, and the academics will never understand it, but good traders do understand it. There are times when no matter what you do, everything you do is going to work. When that happens, your job is to understand that it's working, it's happening. Trade larger. There are going to be times when no matter what you do, no matter how much work you put in, no matter how much fundamental analysis you do, every trade you do will be wrong. And it just happens.
Mm.
When that happens, you have to recognize it and trade smaller.
Right.
The academics will never understand it, but it is the harsh reality of trading.
I think the most interesting thing
is when it's easy, it is so easy.
Yeah.
And when it's hard, it is unbelievably hard.
Yeah, I think the most interesting thing that came out of this whole last 18 months is this whole, for right now at least, the breakdown of the whole idea of buy and hold, which was, I think, one of the reasons we had such a problem, by the way, was because people were so stubborn and, decided as usual, at the capitulation point, or they created the capitulation point, and they've been so ingrained to not sell. I mean, I have people that we had Citigroup, and we were selling it at about 45 way back in the day. And people were saying, why are you selling that? You never sell that. And I said, well, okay. And same thing with GE. You know, what I found is people buy GE, they never sell GE. They never sell GE.
Yeah. And that's true, and I think buy and hold has gone by the wayside. At least I hope it has.
Yeah, I agree for some time. So, all right, so in closing, I also heard last night or a few days ago that you talked about you believe that the market is rolling here. I mean, from a time that looked like it was never going to stop going down to a time that looked like it never would stop going up, and we're not going to get into my whole rant about the government's hand and all this, but generally speaking, where do you see kind of the next few months going?
Well, I think for the next month, we're probably going to go lower. One of the old trading aphorisms is sell in May and walk away, and I think that's exactly what's happening this year.
Yeah.
You had a powerful, monstrous rally. Much of it was probably short covering. I do happen to think that the lows made in March were the lows.
Right.
I think there will be lows for many, many years into the future. But when you're up 30-some percent from those lows, which by any historical measure is an extremely overextended market, you're probably going to go down for a bit, so I'm actually a little bit short. We've been trying to get short in the exchange-traded fund that I manage up in Canada. I'm trying to get short in my own account a little bit, and we've been doing that for the last two or three days, and right now the market's telling me that that's the right thing to do.
Yep, I hear you. Dennis Gartman, I appreciate you stopping by the Disciplined Investor Podcast. We'll make sure people have all the information on how to get the Gartman letter, and keep up the great work, my friend.
Thank you, my friend. Good to talk with you. Be well.
All right, same thing. Bye-bye. Hey, that was a great interview. This is a great guy. I really like listening to Dennis Gartman. He has a wealth of information. I encourage you to check out his letter, if only for a trial, and see if it's something that suits your needs. Now, I wanted to also mention that on the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, we're going to put a chart of the McClellan Oscillator and the Summation Index for you to check out. And I have a couple of things I want to put there. There's some posts I want you to read. Some things that we are talking about. I talked about some China issues. I talked about some reasons why the bear market may not be over, or at least if was at the last of the rally for a little while, just for a little while. And what does that mean? And how to really spot some of these issues and what to be looking for. And I wanted to also put on there some things that you can take away. So go check that out. Oh, make sure to go over there and check it out often. I encourage you also to track me on Twitter, because what happens is when I put a post up on the site, it automatically hits Twitter. And that's just Andrew Horowitz, twitter.com/AndrewHorowitz. Follow me on Twitter and Facebook and all that good stuff. I look forward to hearing from you. I'd love to hear your emails and tell me what's going on. Make sure to you know, what you like, what you don't like. It's fine. I got a thick skin. Not too thick, okay? So, you know, if you have something you want to talk about, hey, send me an email. I'll be happy to take a listen. And if you want to check out the 14-minute video, or the audio video, the tour, if you will, that we have for the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, where if you want to invest with us, you know, I think that you'll be pretty, you know, interested in seeing what we do. We have a private blog that only our clients can see, and we talk about what we're doing and have conversations about what we're investing in. Check it out. I'll put a link on that on the website as well. Until next time, we will talk soon. I have coming up a guru investor. I think you'll enjoy this. He is he wrote a book. He was actually on the Strategy Lab with me through MSN. His name is John Reese, and he'll be on the next podcast talking about what the gurus are doing and how to invest like a guru. Until that time, I wish you well. Speak to you soon. It's Andrew Horowitz signing off on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. See you soon.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.